Coming up on this week's book show, Olive Kittredge, the funny, wicked, remorseful, and gruff woman who was the propelling force in Elizabeth Strout's book of short stories, Olive Kittredge, which won the 2009 Pulitzer Prize for Fiction, is back in Strout's new collection, Olive Again. Joe Donahue speaks with Elizabeth Strout on this week's book show.
Welcome to the Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Olive Kittredge has returned, the funny, wicked, remorseful, and gruff woman who was the propelling force in Elizabeth Strout's book of short stories, Olive Kittredge, which won the 2009 Pulitzer Prize for Fiction, is back in Strout's new collection, Olive Again. In the new novel, Olive is either a central character or plays a peripheral role in each of the 13 stories. They see Olive age from her 70s into her 80s, increasingly hit with the physical and emotional afflictions of her years. Elizabeth Strout is also the author of the books Anything Is Possible, My Name Is Lucy Barton, The Burgess Boys, Abide With Me, and Amy and Isabel. Again, her latest is Olive Again. Before a live audience, it is a pleasure to welcome Elizabeth Strout to this week's book show. Olive Again, Olive Kittredge is back. At what point did you even think that this would be a character that you would want to revisit?
At no point did I think that I would want to revisit Olive Kittredge. It never occurred to me that I would revisit Olive Kittredge. And then a few years ago, I was sitting in a cafe in Oslo by myself for the week. I had the weekend in Oslo to kill some time, and I was sitting in a cafe, and boy, did she just show up. She just showed up, and I saw her nosing her car into the marina early in the morning. I saw her get out of her car. I realized that she now had a cane, and she was so vivid that I thought, I have to write this down. So I did, and that was really it.
So I want to talk more about that, but have you ever had that happen with another character before?
Well, you know, Olive's Olive. I mean, so there's no other character quite like Olive. Yes, I've had revisits with other people. I mean, I can't actually... Yes, but not like that. Not like that. Not with somebody that I actually thought was just done by.
So my understanding is that in the writing... The first story that we read is not the first story you wrote.
No, the first story that I wrote is not the first story that's... Because I never write anything from beginning to end.
Why does that work for you?
I don't know. But I figured it out a long time ago that that if I work in scenes as opposed to a linear type of attempt to get myself from the front to the end... that's never worked for me. So if I work in scenes, then I realized a long time ago that if I can get a scene down that has some sort of heartbeat to it, and if I can do that every day, maybe even two scenes, we'll see, you know, depending on the day, they will eventually connect.
And does that connection feel natural to you, or
yes,
do you have to work on that?
No, the connection will be natural. And the parts that do not end up connecting get tossed on the floor.
Will they maybe ever see the light of day, or no? Probably not.
I don't think so.
No. But then that's all right.
They're gone.
Yeah.
Every so often I clean the floor. So, they're gone.
So, the idea from the beginning in the first novel... of having these stories, some with her front and center, others with her in the background. You knew that from the beginning?
I did, because when I was working on Olive Kittredge, the original Olive Kittredge, I understood rather early on that she was a lot to take. And I thought, if Olive shows up on every page, this is not going to work. I wouldn't want to see her on every page, and I assumed that you wouldn't either. So what I did was I realized, okay, let's look at people in the community who know her, but every person would know her differently, which was fascinating to me because I love point of view, you know, and how we all think we know somebody, but we don't. We just know a certain part of them, and somebody else knows a different part. So that's when I wrote the stories that were part of Olive's life, and that's what I chose to do the second time.
So in the second time, the first time, when I assume you weren't in Norway, but she came to you the first time.
Oh, right. She showed up the first time. I was unloading the dishwasher, and she, oh, boy. She showed up, and she was like she was almost standing behind me, and I could see I could envision a picnic table. I've never had a picnic table in my life, and I don't even know anybody who does. But there was a picnic table, and there was this large woman right sort of behind me, and I could hear in her head thinking, it's high time everybody left. And wow. I thought, okay, then this is her son's wedding. And she wants them to go home. So I wrote that down right away.
The second time she came fully formed when you were in Norway, did she look like Frances McDormand?
No. No, she didn't. She looked like my Olive.
Because I had a much different view of her than I saw the miniseries, and I thought, oh, so then as I was reading this book, it's kind of hard to get her out of your head.
Frances?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Frances did a wonderful job.
Yeah.
She just doesn't look visually to me like my Olive.
So your Olive is taller?
She's
bigger?
Taller. She's bigger. She's not as pretty as Frances is. I think Frances is pretty.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, but Olive's Olive. She's just like a big woman.
And you always knew that she was going to be big as far as taking over the page as well.
Yes, because she announced herself in such a way. Yeah.
How much of that was her? How much of that do you think was Maine, her upbringing, your upbringing?
Right. Well, I mean, Olive is from Maine. She is part of the Maine culture. That's what she comes from. That's what her history is. And that's she has to be in Maine because place is very, very important. When you're writing about people, the place that they live in or the place that they come from is important, I think. And the time in history that they live in as well. So place and time are very important. And her place and time is Crosby, Maine. And I do come from Maine. I've lived in New York for 36 or 7 years now. But I do come from Maine, and I understand the culture that she comes from.
And that's natural for her. I mean, she's very comfortable in that place, isn't she?
Yeah, absolutely. As comfortable as she is anywhere.
You know. Do you think about what made her that way? I mean, we know about her mom and dad. We know certain things, but do you have to have that fully in your mind as to, okay, she is this way, but why is she this way?
Right. I think I know about her a little bit more than I put on the page, but I don't need to put it on the page. All I need to do, as far as I'm concerned, writing the books, is to put her actions on the page and let you absorb them or enter them or not. So I know a little bit more about her, but I give the reader what I think they need to know.
You trust them then? You trust the
reader?
I
do trust the reader. I have a very real relationship with reader. I mean, I have an ideal reader that I write for. It's one ideal reader, and it's neither male nor female or anyone in between, but it's a person who's patient, but they're not super patient. It's a person who's sort of kind-hearted, but not super kind-hearted. And it's a person who I feel needs my book at this particular point in their life, and therefore my sense of responsibility of how to deliver that book to them is high. And that's what I'm working with as I write. So I'm writing for that reader who I feel needs my book.
That's okay, this is therapy time. So what does it? Well, I mean, so are you the ideal reader?
No.
No.
No, I'm so making it
you.
Up. I'm making like
no,
I
know you're making it up for someone else, but you wouldn't necessarily fit that role.
I guess so. I just don't think of myself. I think of this ideal reader. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like we're in a dance together, but I have to take the lead. Mm-hmm. Because they need me to do this for them.
Do things like this help in that when you will talk to readers and you go out and you talk to them, they tell you what they think, you have those interactions. Does that help you, or does your ideal reader, is that better just in your head?
I do every so often meet an ideal reader. Mm-hmm. but no, it's
do you have like
it's,
a badge
very,
for them or anything?
What? No, I'm just saying. But it is always helpful for me to meet my readers because, you know, I spend a lot of time alone. Writers do. We spend a lot of time alone. And so it's very helpful and oftentimes wonderful for me to meet my readers.
Elizabeth Strout is our guest. The name of the new book is Olive Again. I was reading this book and I got about halfway through, and I was mad at myself because I wish I had, from the beginning, kept track of how many deaths there were. There's quite a body count in this book.
Hmm.
You didn't realize that?
No.
Really?
No.
So, it's almost every chapter that someone has killed himself or has died or is this or their husband has passed, their wife has passed.
Oh. Well, that's life. I'm writing about life. I'm writing about a certain age of life.
Well, that's very true, yes.
I mean, no, but
it's
don't think
conscious.
Of it that way.
No. You don't think
I mean, I don't think of it as like, oh, well, Betsy's dead and Henry's dead and so on. I mean, I don't think of that. I just think these are people. Jack is Jack. He's dealing with this and Olive is dealing with that, so.
But it brings up a lot that you explore in the relationships between husbands and wives, spouses, partners, and, of course, children.
Right. Well, that's about everything, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But especially for this character who we have already said is larger than life,
right.
So has a different perspective than others would, maybe.
Maybe. Maybe.
Because she says what's on her mind, and it's just out there.
She is out there, yeah.
Now, is that comfortable in the sense of, because there are times when you wince when you read what she says, and I assume you like that.
I don't really know when my ideal reader will wince or not. I mean, I'm not thinking about their wincing. I'm thinking about trying to deliver something that feels authentic and can help them feel larger for a moment, you know, in some way, to give them a vision, even momentarily, of something bigger than themselves, or even pictures of themselves, moments of themselves that they can recognize that they didn't know that they recognized. So that's... I'm not making them wince. So what about her wincing?
I was going back to the times of things that she just said. She's very blunt.
Right. Yeah.
She's very out there. She'll just say things.
Right.
So you then really have to kind of clean that up for us, for the ideal reader.
Right. No, I don't, actually, because a long time ago when I was writing the first Olive Kittredge, I realized... At the end of the day, I thought, oh, boy, she's so badly behaved. I've got to pull back on this. And then I thought, no. Just let her be Olive. And that was a real moment for me. And I understood, nope, I'm not going to judge her. I don't judge my characters when I write, which is wonderfully freeing for me to suspend the judgment. And I just thought, let her go. Let her be Olive. And that was great. And then I have let her be Olive. And that's exactly who she is.
Does it come through in how the other characters relate to her/judge her? if you let Olive be Olive, right. We still understand the greater import of how she is behaving and impact it has on other people because
of how they react.
Oh
my word, she's quite a thing actually, and of course she has many responses to her in the page and in the reader with the readers. As she should.
The relation.
I mean, you guys can judge her all you want. Seriously, I'm just saying that I don't. That's all.
You don't judge her?
No, because I'm making her.
And you trust her?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she's going to be Olive, so.
Can you trust all of your characters like that?
Yeah, I think I do. I think I really do, because if I don't have that connection with them on some level, then they get tossed on the floor.
When you're making up that community and the chapters that don't involve Olive directly, are those coming to you at a time where you're consciously thinking that this would be an interesting character to develop, this would be something to be in between these two stories, or to just put in the totality of the novel?
Well, you know, an awful lot, particularly for a great deal of the writing that I do, a lot of it is not conscious. So it's not like I consciously think to myself, well, let's have an eighth grade cleaning girl. I don't think that. I just feel somebody arrive, and then it becomes Kaylee Callahan. And then I like her more and more, and then I think, oh, okay, let's see her at the top of the stairs. So that's how I work. And then at the end, I think, let's put this in Olive, because we can do that, because Olive is, you know, she's very organic in that story. She shows up at the nursing home, and she has her conversations with Kaylee in a very authentic Olive way. But so what I'm trying to say is I don't consciously think these things. They just kind of arrive, and then I develop them, or if I don't, it's because they aren't arriving right.
Does it scare you if they don't arrive?
No, they are always arriving. Oh.
They just keep coming.
They just keep coming.
When you think of Olive, especially at the end of the book, tell us about when she's in the nursing home and there's these caretakers, and the relationship there of how you, I'm using this as an example because it's so, I think, so beautifully exemplifies what you do, which is make those characters so rich, even though we've only read them for two sentences.
Well, I just imagine them very deeply. You're talking about this story called Heart,
right,
where Olive has had a heart attack, and she comes home and she needs home, or her son thinks that she needs home health care, and she has it for a couple of weeks. And she has one woman that she refers to in her head as Big Betty. And Big Betty has a bumper sticker with what Olive calls that horrible orange-haired president on the back of the truck. And this horrifies her about Big Betty. And she decides to deal with it. But then the next time a woman walks in who's a Somali from Shirley Falls, an hour away. And so Big Betty's not nice to the Somali woman, and Olive lets her have it. But the ending of that story, I'm not going to tell you what the end of the story is, but the ending was interesting to me to realize this is what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to present right or wrong as much as trying to present real human conditions and situations.
And that character of Betty, because she calls her Betty Boop at one point,
right? She does. She says, well, after she's unpleasant to the Somali woman, she says, now you listen to me, Betty Boop.
I mean, that's great.
Yeah, it's fabulous.
And that tells us about her, that tells us about
Olive
and the character as well.
And then we find out about Betty. And she's got her story.
She certainly does.
And because everybody does.
Did you know she was going to have a heart attack?
No, I didn't. I did not know. I didn't know.
But you knew
she
had a cane just because of age?
No, because she'd had that accident at Chewy's.
Right.
Where she totaled three cars because she stepped on the gas pedal instead of the brake.
So that's the cane.
the cane because she cracked her sternum, but she's fine. She's been using a cane for 3 weeks since that accident. That's why she had the cane. Heart attack, it didn't occur to me until much later. And I just, all of a sudden, I just thought, oh, let's have her in the hospital room lying there looking at the ceiling. So I did.
And there's that great differentiation between the first husband and the second husband.
Oh, wow. She's got two very different husbands. She's had two very different husbands, yeah.
Henry.
Yeah, Henry, who's just the loveliest man in the whole world. And then Jack, who's Jack. But I think that Jack, you know, there's much to be said against Jack, but he knows it, you know? He knows who he is. And he's honest in a way that she's honest, in a bizarre sense. I mean, they're a strange coupling, but they're kind of not when you really think about it.
And, no, they don't seem strange.
No.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Right, exactly.
And they even talk about how they need each other.
Yeah, and they do. And they both just are very, very lonely, and they like each other. I mean, they love each other, actually, you know. It's interesting.
The son is her only son. That relationship is so fraught. It was in the first book. It is in this book. Mm. You feel bad. You just feel bad that that's the case.
Right. All right. Well, let me just say, by the end of the book, you know, I think that Christopher has always had a little problem growing up. And when his wife gets mad at him and she says, "You're such a child," you know, I realized, oh, right, of course he is. Because once in a blue moon, he'll say, when he's extremely upset, he'll say, "Mummy."
Yeah.
And I think that's fascinating because he's a grown man, but it shows the primal connection that he actually feels with her. And then as she becomes older and he gets older, I think that they grow up together in a way.
And how hard even he works to get her into a new place to live.
Yeah.
And he's working very hard
He really is. He's on her side. I think kind of all the time, but by the end of the book, he's definitely on her side, even though he doesn't appear to be at the beginning. But by the end of the book, I think he's on her side.
We learn that of her second husband, and did you know what his fate was going to be?
No, that was in the first story. I wasn't even sure they were married, but that first story that I sketched out in Oslo that weekend, I realized, oh, all right, she's 82. She's telling this woman that she's had two husbands, so she's had a second husband. He's dead. And then I realized, of course, it would be Jack Keniston. Let's go back and marry them up.
Yeah.
So I did.
We don't read directly about Jack's death.
No.
Did you think about it?
I thought about it, but I didn't have any reason. I saw no reason to put that on the page. He just dies.
I'm wondering whether, if you do write something like that, then we certainly see her react to traumatic, awful situations. That would be another, of course, of how she would react to it. But it's almost more impactful by seeing how she is relating to it later.
That's right. That's what I thought. Like when she sits in his chair because she doesn't like to see it gapingly empty. I thought that's really what the reader needs to know, not much more.
The moment that my heart kind of melts for her is when she's alone and she has that transistor radio and the pillow and listening to that voice.
Yeah.
That says a lot.
It does. And she even, or the narrator says she held it like a teddy bear or a stuffed animal to her cheek at night. And it's poignant, I think.
And you didn't go into great detail of what she was listening to, because that didn't really matter.
No, it doesn't matter. She just knows whether or not she's hearing the words, and if she's hearing the words, then she's awake. That's all she knows.
Do you think that there are other characters that could have a similar fate, i.e. a sequel, in them?
Do you mean would I write about Olive once more?
Well, I was going to ask
again,
if there's
Olive once more.
There you go. No, you. I was. My question was: Was there another character that you think you could write another sequel to
about in this book?
Or a character that you've written in the past who could fill a sequel?
I don't know. I don't know yet.
Yeah.
Quite possibly.
And
because I have more and more characters, and I like them very much. They're my friends, in a way. So I could very easily possibly write about another one of them again in a different way.
Lucy Barton.
Yeah.
My Name Is Lucy Barton is going to Broadway. Laura Linney is playing My Name Is Lucy Barton, and the crowd
That's
is
right.
ooing right now, Elizabeth. And this is at the, it's going to be on Broadway. It opens in January. It's the Manhattan Theater Club at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater. And it's a one-woman show.
Right. And it played in London last summer for 6 weeks. And she was just wonderful.
She's an amazing actress.
Absolutely.
It was wonderful. So what is your, do you have any interaction in this? I know there was a playwright that...
I did. There was a playwright who adapted the book, but she used all my words. So Lucy's voice, because Lucy is written in the first person, Lucy's voice is taken directly from the book and the adapter, you know, cut and shuffled. But the words are Lucy's words, which is essential, I think, because Lucy is her voice, or her voice is Lucy. So she did a wonderful job, I think, of making these different cuts. And then I was in a few rehearsals with Laura Linney, and it was fascinating. It was just really interesting.
And do you feel that, I mean, this is weird too, does it come that you have an ideal theater goer that is similar to an ideal reader?
Oh, you know, I don't, but maybe I should work on that. Except it's not in my control.
It isn't in your control, but it's your character and it's your words.
Yeah. I just hope they like it because she's such a lovely person. She's so good.
Laura.
Laura Linney.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you meant her or Lucy.
No, Laura Linney is just wonderful. And
yeah.
So I think I feel like it's her thing, not mine anymore, you see.
Absolutely.
And so I just want people to like her.
You'll go to the opening?
Yeah.
And you'll see it and then see how audiences respond.
I know. Whew.
People responded beautifully to the miniseries.
Yes, they did. And they also loved it. They loved Laura Linney in London when it ran in London. They liked it a lot there, too. So that was a really, wonderful.
Sort of know where you're going with that.
Right.
Do you ever imagine Olive on stage? That's a great reaction. I like that.
I don't know.
But it would probably be the same problem that you were talking about before, that it would be too much of her.
Well, yes. She would have to be off stage quite a bit.
Just let the other characters kind of reverberate as she leaves.
Right.
The name of the new novel is Olive Again. It is published by Random House. It is a glorious read. It's so comforting and beautiful and meaningful and just lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The name it again is Olive Again. It's published by Random House. Elizabeth Strout, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.